Health and Human Services Budget Division will come to order. The first bill we have on our agenda today is Senate File 2567, authored by Senator Cohen, who rarely makes an appearance in this committee, so this is almost a historic event.
Well, Madam Chair, it's not quite that historic, but I appreciate that, so I assume that means the bill will pass pretty easily then. With that introduction, Madam Chair, Member, Senate File 2567 actually is a continuation of bills I actually have had in front of this committee in years past, and this is a bill requested through the Jewish Community Relations Council on behalf of the Shalom Home Alliance, and it's considered to be a minor fix to legislation that I think I had first authored, I believe my first year in the Senate, if I'm not mistaken. Relative to the ability of the Shalom Home in the Twin Cities to serve kosher food. Obviously, the preparation of food on a religious basis is a little bit more expensive than food that would be bought anyplace else. And so there was placed in statute language that would allow the payment rates to be based upon whatever the future rate increases were. So this legislation strikes the word increases and substitutes adjustments to take into account what might be happening within the department and make it easier to parallel the statute allowing for this for the purchase of kosher food. There is the A1 amendment, which was requested by the department to make what I am told is a technical change, and Madam Chair, I'd have to defer to both the department and the committee in that regard. But it was asked to make the change was requested to strike constructing and insert comparing to. As I said, this was a change requested by the department, and I know somebody's here from the department who could maybe offer an explanation of the amendment, but I would ask that the amendment be offered at the outset as part of the bill.
Senator Lynch will offer the A1 amendment for Senator Cohen. I believe this is the first hearing on the bill.
That's correct,
and
Madam
so
Chair.
This would be considered author's amendment. So those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Cohen, did you want someone from the department to testify on the bill?
Or? If members would like to hear somebody who could offer what maybe a little bit of the history and why this change is being requested. Again, this is a continuation of present statute, but if there is somebody from the agency, obviously I know you, Madam Chair, like to have testimony from the agency when appropriate. I thought there would be somebody here.
Okay, well, do you want to call your witness? Somebody is coming. Okay.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Greg Spell from the Department of Human Services.
Welcome.
Thank you. Would you, I don't know how much you want to hear from us regarding this. I can tell you that we suggested to the provider that this amendment language be put in simply because as the bill stands, it doesn't do anything because when you – these food adjustments that the Shalom facilities received, if you're taking them out of an array or calculation of a median, it doesn't do anything. It's just the way statistics and numbers fall. But if you compare them to, take them out for the comparison of a median, then it has an effect.
So does this amendment change the fiscal note?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this does not change the fiscal note simply because there is no current law for a rate adjustment for any nursing facilities right now. As it stands, they are going to get their current rates continued on unless some other legislation is passed.
And my understanding is that this might have a cost if there is a rate cut.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this will have an effect on the fiscal note of a different piece of legislation. The fiscal note will be different with this language than without it on another bill that does something to nursing facility rates.
Okay, so at this point, I don't know whether we'll have to do anything like that or not, but We want Senator Cohen to meet deadlines, so I think we have an agreement that he would hold this bill, not take it up on the floor of the Senate until the omnibus bill was ready.
Madam Chair, I recognize that at this point in the session, there are a lot of moving targets, so to speak, in terms of how we handle the budget. And obviously, members of the committee are well aware that we're in the process of conferring part of the budget. But because of the uncertainty as to what happens out of Washington, as well as what happens internally within the state capitol, we're not quite sure where we're going to go with Health and Human Services. Obviously, I would share the chair's concern that there's not going to be the need to make any further nursing home adjustments in per diem rates or anything else. But I recognize at this point in the session we can't guarantee that. So I'm hoping that this bill could be passed. And I understand that we'll have to, I don't know what other nursing home legislation this committee is considering, but I recognize that we'll have to take a look at all that in the context of where we are with the overall budget.
Okay, good. Any other questions for the department? All right. You want your witness to come?
Well, Madam Chair, if members would like to have further testimony as to what the direct impact is and what's going on, I do have a couple of people who could offer that testimony if the committee would so choose.
Are there questions for witnesses? Yeah, they'd like to hear your witnesses.
Oh, I'm Michael Klein. I'm the administrator at Cholom Home West in St. Louis Park, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, perhaps, what did you say your name was?
Michael Klein.
Okay, Mr. Klein. Perhaps you could tell us what the impact would be to you in more practical terms, why this legislation is important.
Okay. Senator, it has impact in that Cholom Home has been offering kosher food to the residents at Cholom Home because we have a large percentage of Jewish clients that require strictly kosher food. And when we get strictly kosher food, it requires getting it from vendors that can supply it to us. And in the slaughtering of the meat, as well as the supervision, the costs are sometimes considerable. They can be as much as 40 or 50% more for meat than it would going into a grocery store. And we also need to keep separate meat dishes and separate dairy dishes. We need to have a rabbi come by and supervise. And all that incurs additional cost. And so what we've tried to do is we've consolidated our kitchens. We've looked for best vendors where we can get lower costs of product, but we still end up, even when we do that, our cost is still 30 or 40% higher than many other nursing homes. So this would help with
being
that.
Higher in the food area.
In the food area.
Right.
Right.
Senator
Strictly
Prettner
the food.
Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Klein, I think I'm more interested in knowing, like, what percent of your budget this would represent, this increase in costs. And what that would mean, I guess, in overall distribution of funds for nursing homes, is what I would be concerned about.
The additional food cost would represent less than probably 1% of our overall daily rate, but that could be roughly $1.50 a day. And therefore, depending upon what the legislation was, that could have an impact on us.
Okay.
Any other questions? Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Mr. Klein, how large is the population?
We have 179 residents that live at Cholom Home West, and we have 92 in our new Schaller Chapman Nursing Home.
And Madam Chair, Mr.
Senator
Klein,
Prettner-Solon.
Are there other nursing facilities that have large Jewish populations?
No, we are primarily the location for Jewish residents that truly would want a rabbi to celebrate, like, Passover, which is coming up, and again to receive kosher food. No other nursing homes in the state offer that.
Any other questions? Senator Erickson-Rolks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Cohen, how might this differ from clients in other nursing homes who may be wanting to go to higher-priced diets like all organic?
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Rolks, that's exactly why this is an infrequent visit for me to the committee. I'm not sure I can answer that. And maybe the gentleman from Human Services could offer a better answer to the question.
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Rolks, a facility that wanted to offer all organic would, of course, incur some slightly higher costs. But under the provisions of this bill, they would not get any sort of benefit from that, simply because this specifically applies to food prepared under religious practices.
And Madam Chair, maybe I'll just add the supplement to that, that obviously somebody who wants to use strictly organic food is not doing so under religious tenets. A better comparison might be that we have an increasingly large Muslim population in the Twin Cities, if not the state of Minnesota. And I'm not sure what's going on with nursing facilities for the Muslim faith, but that's something that will obviously at some point be an issue as well.
Any other questions? Senator Lynch, do you want to move the bill as amended for Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 2567 as amended be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on Finance.
So we'll go to Finance. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Okay. Amateur members, thank you.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Madam Chair, 2972 was heard in the Policy Committee and is being referred here for its fiscal note. This would allow pharmacists to do video conferencing for medication management in particularly rural areas where there may not be pharmacists available or the pharmacists are the sole operators of a facility and don't have the time to meet with the patients and to manage their medications. And you will see that there is a small fiscal savings to the state. I think that it could grow as more video conferencing spaces became available in rural areas and as more patients began to take advantage of this. I do have a student from the pharmacy school in at UMD who brought this novel idea to me, and I'd like him to be able to testify briefly.
Sure.
And it's his name is Mr. Tomaszewski.
Mr. Tomaszewski, welcome. It's always kind of fun when we have people get involved in the legislative process who aren't usually. So welcome.
Thank you. And just to clarify a little bit, I did actually just recently graduate from pharmacy school, and now I'm going on and getting my PhD, so I'm continuing on with my education, but I'm also a practicing pharmacist currently.
Great. So would you like to tell us about how you got this idea?
Sure. As a graduate from UMD, a practicing pharmacist from the Duluth area, we currently run into some issues every once in a while dealing with some of our range cities and outcropping areas where pharmacists aren't available to provide the service. And medication therapy management services really require a pharmacist to be able to pull themselves away from their standard day-to-day pharmacy practice setting and sit down with the patient one-on-one and really discuss all the patient's medical needs and medication needs and and develop the most optimal healthcare plan for that patient. In order to do that, you need a pharmacist who can operate without the constraints of your standard pharmacy that can pull themselves away. So this bill itself will allow for settings where that pharmacist isn't available or if that single pharmacist is there to use telemedicine services through video conferencing to operate through the center of another pharmacy or another pharmacist who can then sit in and discuss with this patient from a remote setting. This covers the need for the travel time that is required from these pharmacists. Currently, one of the healthcare providers that I was discussing this bill with originally was St. Mary's Duluth Clinic, who operates clinics outside of the Duluth area, particularly International Falls, where there isn't currently a provider that they can use up there. And they were working with flights to get pharmacists traveling up there, being flown up there, and the cost for travel really wasn't covering the benefit when they were providing it. And they were really concerned moving forward if the service was going to survive in areas like that, if that they can't provide the providers to do it. So the bill came about because they were looking to utilize what's already available right now for physicians with telemedicine services and extend it to pharmacy.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Putner Solon.
The department has identified a $676 per each new recipient savings for those who are receiving the MTM services.
Right. Are there any questions of our witness? No, thank you very much for the work you did on this.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Megan Kelly is also here from the Minnesota Pharmacists Association.
Let's have her come up then.
Madam Chair, Senator Prentner Solon, and members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Megan Kelly, and I'm a fourth-year pharmacy student down here in the Twin Cities. I'm planning on practicing here when I'm done, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Pharmacists Association to ask for your support for this bill. We are excited that we are moving in a future direction, and not only are we hoping to reach rural patients, but eventually to move this bill forward to meet needs of patients who have limited access and mobility. And that we also have several providers already planning to provide the service via televideo, even here in the Twin Cities. So we ask for your support. It's in line with our goal to improve medication use and to advance patient care to optimize patient health care outcomes. Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Erickson-Robes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not so much of a question as an observation that these ideas seem to be coming from people of a different generation than we are, Senator Prentner Solon. I know I hear this all the time from my kids. It's like, duh. We really need to think about different ways of engaging technology, and we are looking at electronic medical records, and we have had presentations on remote monitoring and that sort of thing, but we really need to do everything we can to move healthcare in that direction. So thank you very much for continuing to push.
Any other questions?
So, Madam Chair,
thank you very much for your testimony.
I move that Senate File 2972 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Any further discussion of that motion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Marty here yet? No. Senator Rosen, are you ready? She's had to step out, I guess. Well, I guess we can take, why don't we do my last bill? Since it is a shorter bill.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to take up Senate File 2904. Senator Berglund. It's being distributed.
I do have an amendment, and I have an oral amendment to the amendment.
That's the A2 amendment, and it's being distributed. The A2 amendment is deleting Section 1 and deleting Section 2.
Right. So basically what we're left with in the bill is the notice to people on the MAEPD program before retirement that they would not be able to keep the more generous asset, their savings, their pension, whatever, would have to be spent down in order to then qualify for the regular MA program again. We're taking out the other parts of the bill because they have fiscal impact. We'd like to work on them longer over the interim and maybe do a little better than we would do with this, since there would be systems costs. Maybe we should go for what we really want and have one systems cost rather than have keep trying to incrementally improve it. The oral amendment, Madam Chair, would be page 5, line 13, delete at each six-month review and insert annually. This would mean there would be a little bit less frequent notice, but it would remove the fiscal note from that part of the bill.
Senator Berglund moves an oral amendment to lines 5.13, deleting at each six-month review, inserting annually. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oral amendment is adopted. And then...
Madam Chair, as I said, what we're left with is a notice to people that are on the MAEPD program. Currently under our law, they're required to retire at 65. This would be giving them notice 2 years before they turn 65 about the changes that they would be facing at that time because of the end of the MAEPD program for them. And as I said earlier, I would like to work over the interim on trying to raise the retirement age within that program. But for now, at least people would get notice and not all of a sudden just what happens now is they just get a notice that they're cut off from medical assistance on their 65th birthday. And for people who are disabled, that's a big shock and a very big hardship.
Okay. Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I think then this bill probably doesn't have any fiscal note left in it, so I would move that Senate File 2904 be recommended to pass.
Senator Berglund's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Senate File 2904 is adopted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see Senator Marty in the room, nor do I see Senator Rosen.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair.
I'll just keep rolling here.
All right. Senate File 3309.
Yeah, I guess we'll do that one next.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty just arrived. Do you
want to
take Senator Marty?
Sure, let's do that.
Senator Marty, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's Senate File 2139, Senator Marty.
I confess I don't even know. I have not seen the fiscal note, but I believe it just came this morning. And, Madam Chair, this members of the committee, this is a bill that would require coverage for orthotic and prosthetic devices. This is something we wouldn't have needed to have legislation for in the past because it used to be covered. It still is. I think most of the health plans say they already do cover it. Thank you. I do have a fiscal note, okay. Anyway, I'm happy to answer questions or whatever. We do have a number of people who can speak to the bill, describing what's been covered and why we're having troubles or concerns about it right now. I don't know if Bill Amberg is here right now.
Senator Marty, we have a fiscal note as far as this bill affects our committee.
Right, right.
But we do not have a fiscal note from CGIP as to what impact it has on the state
On the state fund, right, okay.
So just so you understand, my intention would be that we would hear this bill in this division today.
Okay.
And then you probably would want to have a hearing in the other division that's
Senator
chaired
Betzold.
By Senator Betzold. Okay. And then if this bill is passing, we would track the savings on our spreadsheet, but have this bill go as a separate bill since it has to go to another division. And if you could keep us apprised of the fiscal note you received for that committee, so that if there is no longer a savings overall, that we would be able to know that.
Right. Madam Chair, I would be sure to let you know that. And I have Aaron Holm and Terry Kufel here, if you would like some brief witnesses explaining the reasons we are seeking support for the bill.
Sure. Let's just take their testimony briefly.
You go first.
Hi, my name is Aaron Holm. I reside in Shakopee, Minnesota with my wife and three children. On January 2nd, 2007, I was assisting my admin assistant change her tire on the side of 394 when an individual traveling down the shoulder at 55 miles an hour struck me from behind. As a result of the impact, I lost both of my legs above the knee. My recovery was quick and effective. Within 5 months, I was healed and fitted with prosthetics. I was walking in 6 months, playing golf, returned to work in 7 months, and kind of resuming my new normal lifestyle. Very active, played a lot of golf. I was able to complete 25 rounds of golf within nine months after the accident. After returning to work and getting back into my new normal, my wife and I started receiving phone calls and emails from individuals from the amputee community and their families asking how I was so successful in rebounding and getting back to work and doing everything that I was doing. And at that time, I realized after talking to people that because I was covered by workman's compensation, I never really looked back. I was given all the tools that I needed to be successful, including the prosthetics that I'm wearing right now, which I'll show off a little bit here, actually made by Ottobock, which is a company based, U.S. headquarters based out of Plymouth, Minnesota. Have them on both legs. So I started working with some of the people in the amputee community, and the biggest complaint that I had heard working with people was we weren't granted the type of prosthetics that we requested. That we felt we needed. As a above-knee amputee, there are certain tools or certain prosthetics out there that are going to help somebody ambulate. They're going to help somebody with their stumble recovery instead of obviously falling to the ground. It puts a fear into somebody when they don't have that type of technology behind them or backing them when they're trying to ambulate up and down hills and stairs and ramps and even uneven surfaces, cracks in sidewalks, et cetera. So I formed a nonprofit organization called Wiggle Your Toes a little over a year ago, and we're helping to give back to the amputee community, and this is kind of part of what we do. I realize as a small nonprofit, we cannot help each individual financially get the tools that they need, but by joining the group and working through this bill here, I think we can help the community as a whole get the tools that they need to be successful and to give back, to get back to work and to get back into society.
Thank you very much. Are there questions?
Madam Chair, Senators, thank you for having us. My name is Terry Cuffell, and I work with the Minnesota Society for Orthotists, Prosthetists, and Pedorthists. We're a group comprised of practitioners, owners in the field, patients, parents, patient advocates. And I will be brief today. We have sat, Aaron and I have sat through several hearings in the Senate and the House, and the point has come down to dollars. And I would like to bring up two specific points. First, there is a state cost analysis that has been created for orthotics and prosthetics nationally. We have, I believe there are approximately 10 states included in the analysis that does show a significant savings to the Medicaid plans when individuals are provided with the appropriate devices at the onset of their treatment. Not only does it result in a cost savings to the state, but also to the insurance carriers themselves. How is that so? The secondary complications include obesity, diabetes, heart disease. What these secondary complications can lead to, we all know, leading a sedentary lifestyle, and can be much more costly to the insurance carriers. As a result, if these individuals who need devices, custom bracing for post-polio, MS, CP, spina bifida, when children have needs, if they are not given the appropriate devices, they are much more costly to the insurance carriers in these secondary claims. Also, a lot of these individuals become wards of the state. They fall to state plans. And that is the second point that I'd like to make, that if these people, again, are provided with appropriate devices on the onset, they will thrive, just as Aaron has testified to, and they will be able to continue to work and be taxpaying members of society. When they are not given the appropriate devices, which is our big concern, both nationally and locally, that is where we see all kinds of detrimental outcomes with the patients that we see every day. One more note. The state study that I did discuss, there was a $455,000 savings in the state of Colorado, both in that first year and in they predicted in subsequent years after the bill. Thank you.
So, Senator Marty, I think we should probably ask someone from DHS about the fiscal note. Fiscal note from DHS shows no savings and no cost. And the actual savings in the bill are from the $125 filing fee that would apply to each form that's filed in the Department of Commerce, which isn't the jurisdiction of this committee, but I believe would be in Thomasoni's committee. I don't know how much time you have to go to how many committees, but maybe if there's a savings there, he won't need to see the bill. But why don't we just get some comment about the testimony that your witness gave us from the Department of Human Services.
And Madam Chair, yes, I recognize I see their fiscal note did not touch on any of those things. And again, I'm not sure how you measure it, but somebody who, Mr. Holm, when he is in good shape because he has limbs that work, if you have the sedentary lifestyle, and again, a lot of people who can't work because they don't have what they need, they're going to be on medical assistance, but I don't know how you measure that. And obviously the department's fiscal note doesn't. But
so I guess a question for the department is, was there consideration of fewer people coming into the Medicaid program if their private insurance did provide more beneficial prosthetic devices.
Madam Chair, my name is Angela Urbanek. I'm a member of the fiscal staff at the Department of Human Services. When the department reviewed the language and prepared the fiscal note for this, we didn't have any data to evaluate savings for the program. We would be more than happy to take a look at any data if it is provided to us. Let's take another look.
So there wouldn't be no cost, but there could be savings if you look at the data from the other 10 states.
You would have to look at the data, yes.
All right. And then, Senator Marty, if we do get a revised fiscal note from the Department of Human Services, if you would let us know
that. We will be sure to do that, Madam Chair, and I'm sure you would be welcome if it does show savings like that, so yes.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. We do have someone else that wants to testify, Senator Marty. Jeff Barsh from Regents Hospital.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Barsh, representing Health Partners and the Minnesota Council of Health Plans today. I'll be very brief. Just want to start by recognizing we had a number of conversations with the advocates about this bill. We're committed to keeping those conversations going. Specifically to the fiscal notice before us, Senator Berglund, you recognize that the savings are not actually a savings to state expenditures, but the result of an increased fee or the numbers of filings that health plans would have to produce and the associated fee with that. So in essence, this is generating revenue to the state in the terms of $31,000, I believe, to the Department of Commerce. We would just oppose that increase in the number of filing charges that were required to send to the department. And maybe that's a conversation for Senator Tomasoni, Budget Division as well.
I don't think it's an increase in the fee. It's just an increase in the number of filings that would take place.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
All right. Any questions, this witness?
Chair, are you looking for a motion, or what's your plans?
I think we can move that it be recommended to pass out of this division, and it can be re-referred internally without floor action or full finance committee action. But you would probably want to speak with the other division chairs that might want to hear the bill, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I will speak with Senator Betzel first, I assume, is the logical one because the CGIP thing.
You know, what happens is that the full finance committee just physically takes the bill to the other office, and then they know they have the bill in their division. So,
Madam
Chair,
I would so move that Senate File 2139 be recommended to pass and sent to the finance committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
And Senator Marty, if we would have had the fiscal note before this morning, we could have maybe not made you stop here. But
Madam Chair, I understand it. I understand
the only way we get fiscal notes is to schedule bills. So
I understand.
At least you've got a fiscal note now.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I guess Senator Rosen is presenting a bill in a different committee, so we'll move on then and take the last two bills on the agenda.
Members, we're on item 6 on the agenda, Senate File 3309. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have an A2 amendment for this bill, and I have an oral amendment to the amendment.
Yeah, thank you. I have an A3 amendment.
For 3309? Being passed out.
Is there an A2 amendment that's being distributed?
I have an A2, so okay. I don't know what A3
is. I think it's coming.
I think the A3 amendment is a different topic that we're just using this bill to get in front of the committee. So I'd like to take the A2 amendment first and finish discussing the basic bill 3309 first. And the oral amendment to the A2 amendment would be page 5, line 6, delete 130 and insert 140.
Senator Berglund moves the A2 amendment incorporating the oral amendment on line 5.6.
Right, and this is the first hearing on this bill, so this would be an author's amendment.
All right. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A2 amendment as amended is adopted. Senator Berglund.
The rest of the amendment is just really technical. The bill itself is an attempt to find a different way to make further reductions in chemical dependency rates as an alternative to the governor's across-the-board rate cut by moving in a similar direction that we moved last year, of bringing facilities that are at the top of the payment rate scale down. Trying to find the right place here. Apparently 130% would seem to have somewhat of a negative effect on state-operated services, so changing it to 140, obviously the fiscal note would have to be revised. There are providers, as we heard in our public testimony, Madam Chair, and members of the division, that only get $11 a day for providing treatment services under our public programs. And it does seem to me that an across-the-board rate cut for those providers would be pretty unfair. So that's why I've been struggling to try and find a different mechanism for doing this. And we're searching for the right number here. So if 130 isn't right, maybe 140 is. I don't know. The intention of the bill is not to do devastating things to state-operated services, but on the other hand, to try to find a better way to get some savings in this area than what the governor proposed.
So. Any discussion or questions? Senator Berglund, please continue.
I'm ready to take the other amendment. Okay. If there are no questions on this subject, this amendment's a different subject.
Senator Lurie.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. I'm just trying to read the fiscal note and compare it to the bill here, and in the expenditure and or revenue formula that they use, they're talking about 130% above the mean rate, whereas the bill is talking about above the average rate, and those are different things, but it's the same thing?
Yeah. Yes. Mean is another word for average.
Well, we'll be getting a new fiscal note with the amendment that I offered, so we'll be getting a different fiscal note anyway, so hopefully fiscal note will still have some savings and have a little less impact on some of the providers.
Okay.
Are we done with this then?
I think we can move on. Senator right. Berglund.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment. This is a hospital surcharge amendment, so it is a different subject. But this is a way to get this in front of the committee. We did discuss this concept when we talked about the General Assistance Medical Care Bill, version 1A. And the concept was removed from the bill in order to help get a governor's signature on a bill. And I guess that's about enough said about that. But the Medicaid hospital surcharge is still a viable mechanism for us to generate a means to help solving the budget deficit and perhaps offsetting some of the governor's other recommendations in his budget. And in this case, we would be offsetting the 3% hospital cut, among other things. So in order to really explain what's in the amendment, I'm going to go through the chart.
Okay.
Looks like this. And I will tell you that the Hospital Association provided me assistance at my request for this proposal. This is not their proposal, so we all understand that very clearly. And it is different than the previous proposal. So I would like to go through it and just kind of point out things that are similar and things that would be different. So if you look at the first column, you'll see what the value of the Medicaid surcharge is at the 2.66% per hospital. The next column would be a 5% medical assistance rate increase, and it would not include the governor's 3% cut. And since that is in the budget as an alternative way of balancing the budget, this column incorporates what the value of buying back that cut would be to hospitals. So it's really the total of an 8% value, but it is a 5% increase over the rate we have today. Then if you look at the next column, it would be removing the governor's cut of the 16 DRGs and bumping the 16 DRGs up to 100%. And that would be the value of that against what the governor's budget would have done. Next is for private hospitals, an add-on for those that have high mental health utilization. And that's the value of those for selected hospitals based on their mental health utilization. The next column is an MA add-on per admission. So it's another way of using our medical assistance payments, but instead of doing it based on the various case mix they have, it's just a straight add-on per admission. Then the next column is an MA add-on per admission that is adjusted for government payer mix, and this again is for private hospitals only. And the way this add-on has been calculated, a hospital's all government payment compared to the non-government payments has been calculated, and then for those that have 50% or more government payments, 2 points has been added. So it's kind of a sliding scale in this area. And for those that are between 40 and 50% government payments, 1.6 points has been added. And then those that are 40% or less of hospital of government payments, 1.2% has been added. And this column is especially beneficial to rural hospitals because they tend to have more Medicare than they do private insurance. And then the last column kind of nets it out, so you can see we do still have winners and losers. I think it's a little bit better than the last stab we made at this. But it's impossible not to end up having some, just because there's some hospitals that have so much Medicaid business, and Medicaid is the basic way we pay our rates to hospitals. So I would be happy to answer any questions about this.
And Madam Chair, the
fiscal note is in your packet, and so you can see what the result is in terms of savings to the state, revenues to the state.
Senator Berglund, the hospital.
This is in the tails as well. There is an adjustment downward in the tails because of the fact that we believe we will hit the Medicare upper limit. Won't be as high in the next fiscal year as it is in this fiscal year. But with health care reform, we don't know that for sure. And so there is some language in the amendment asking the department to report that to us so that we could make adjustments next year if we choose to go with this concept to perhaps take advantage of a higher Medicare upper limit.
And Senator Berglund, the MA surcharge is, again, a mechanism for us to utilize in order that we can capitalize and draw down on additional federal funds.
Right. Senator Berglund. Would be able to get more Medicaid funding into our budget through this proposal, and it would be Medicaid funding that we know is available today, as opposed to Medicaid funding that might be lurking in the halls of the Capitol in Washington, D.C.
And it looks like Ms. Krinke would like to join you. Ms. Krinke, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I just would like to provide one additional comment on technical information here. Your shaded hospitals on this chart are critical access hospitals.
Doesn't show up on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. The copies that you all have does not have a shaded column for the critical access hospitals.
They are very slightly shaded. Very closely.
I just would like to provide one comment on our critical access hospitals. Minnesota has about 70 hospitals that are critical access hospitals with less than 25 beds. They are allowed to do Medicare cost reports and get back the portion of the surcharge on their Medicare cost report that is equivalent to their percentage of Medicare business. So, for example, in rural Minnesota, the average hospital has approximately 50% Medicare patient revenue. Some hospitals are as high as 60 or 70% in rural Minnesota. Some are down to 40. But for just sake of discussion today, let's just say the average is 50%. So that means for all of those hospitals that are in the shaded area here, let's just pick on Albany because it's toward the top and it's relatively easy for me to divide. So if Albany is paying an additional surcharge of $40,000, they would get back $20,000 in their future Medicare cost report if they had 50% Medicare business. So that would offset a fair amount of their increased surcharge. So I just wanted that to provide that information to the committee today in terms of a technical. I know a lot of members of this committee are very concerned about rural hospitals, and we appreciate that. So I just wanted that to be in addition to what Senator Berglund has said today.
Ms. Krinke, it's even if we look close, we can't see that on the sheets that we have. So perhaps as a follow-up to the division members, I think that would be information that would be very helpful in our discussions, particularly with our colleagues who don't serve on this division.
The Hospital Association will be happy to do that. And I am sorry, this has come about very quickly, and we have not had an opportunity to vet this yet with our appropriate committees. And we know that you all have very difficult tasks ahead for you, and we'd like an opportunity to see this in the context of the rest of the budget. But I'm sure we'll be in communications very soon with the committee. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. The last time we did this, I remember that we did go through several iterations before we got to kind of what we were going to bring forward in the bill. And I'm just hoping that we're able to continue discussing this as well.
Oh, yes.
And maybe have an iteration. One idea that comes to me, you know, on first looking at it, I have a small critical access rural hospital that is publicly owned. Kennebec is owned by the county and would be excluded from the high mental health, which they are a high mental health facility, and they'd also be excluded from the add-on for government payer mix column. And those would be very beneficial to this small rural hospital, but they're excluded. In the way this is drawn, I'd like to see if we can try to make adjustments. So if this is going to be an iterative process again, that gives me the comfort I need to.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Lori, I can tell you the reason the public hospitals were left out of those two columns is because whatever we do, Hennepin and Regents come out pretty well because of their high Medicaid volume. And so we were trying to get the money that we have on the table back to different hospitals. But there might be a way to do what you want to do and not have that impact.
Yeah, I was, Senator Madam Lloyd. Chair, Senator Berglund, I was thinking maybe it could be private not-for-profit or critical access might capture a couple of these county-owned little ones. I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing out some ideas.
Madam Chair and Senator Lori, I'm perfectly happy to keep working with you on it.
Thank you.
Additional questions from members? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is a lot to digest in a very short time, and there are, again, clearly some significant winners on the last column, and I'm struggling with that a little bit. So I guess I would echo what Senator Lori said. I'm not comfortable with this at all. I mean, how can Bemidji make almost $2.8 million?
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, if you look across the chart, you can see based on their revenues, their contribution is a little over $400,000. The MA rate adjustment is a little over $500,000. The 16 DRGs alone is worth $1.2 million to them. So you can see how the governor's budget would be pretty devastating in just that recommendation alone to the Bemidji Hospital. And then when you look at the MA add-on and the government payer mix adjustment, you get, you know, over another million. Bemidji does have very, very high government payer mix. And I know when we talked about this concept earlier, it was something that was brought up. Mm-hmm. And while it helps Bemidji, it helps many other rural hospitals that don't have as high a Medicaid mix but have a much higher Medicare mix. And so that's why we have this government payer column on here. Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm happy to keep working on this with you. This is not such an easy dance to do, but we're in a situation where we have some pretty difficult choices to make. Mm-hmm. And I think this option certainly does need to be on the table as one option for us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And Senator Bergen, I'd like to take a look at the 17 CCOs that are supposed to be 17 CCOs and see how their runs are going to work in comparison with this, too. Just in comparison as far as.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Rosen. We do have a list of potential revenues under that bill, but everybody under that bill loses a lot of money. They're all losing over 70%.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Of the payments that they, of what the costs are for treating people. So, you know, you really need to look at that list in terms of losses rather than gains.
And members, I know for particularly for those rural members, the inclusion of the, or the zeroing out, I guess, of the cut to the 16 DRGs is incorporated here, and I know that that's an issue that has been of concern to many members of this division and some of our colleagues in the outlying areas. Additional questions or comments? Senator Berglund, do you have anything more to add on the A3?
I'd like to add it to the bill, and then we have some testimony that people would like to make on the base bill.
Okay. Senator Berglund moves the adoption of the A3 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Berglund, would you like to go to your testifiers? I see there are three people that I have on the agenda. We'll begin by welcoming Carol Falkowski to the committee. Ms. Falkowski, welcome.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank you and apologize for speaking out of turn about an average being a mean. I taught statistics in college, and it's the same term for arithmetic average as a mean, so I should just be quiet sometimes. Sorry.
Welcome. Happy
All right,
to have
thank
you.
Thank you. I'd like to start by, for the record, I'm director of the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division of the Department of Human Services, and I'd like to start by briefly explaining that the rates that are paid for public patients through the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund are currently negotiated between a program and a county, or a program and a host count, or host tribe. There's no state involvement in this process at all. So whatever a program gets is based on what they negotiate with their host county or tribe. Because of this, and because it's been this way for the past 25 years, services have evolved organically, and rates have, and in fact, the rates are quite variable. Some people, including me, would call them all over the map. So to address this variability, the 09 legislature and the Federal Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services Administration directed the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division to develop state-negotiated treatment rates. And the goal of developing the statewide rates is to eliminate this huge variability that the consolidated fund, that our public dollars pay for similar services. It's also to develop rates that are based on actual costs, and it's also to incorporate into the rate structure allowances for services that are required for the most acute and complex patients. So this rate reform process leading to statewide rates is underway. We enlisted input of 60 providers. We have a consultant from the federal government who's done this in many states. And the legislation that requires these new state rates requires that they're effective by July of next year. So next year we'll have for your consideration, next session, language that will establish these state rates. At the same time these state rates were mandated, the consolidated fund was subject to unallocation last session. And this savings was achieved by capping the rates at 60% above the average or mean rates within each service type. Now, I have a handout that I would like you to receive if the pages could do it. At any rate, this meant, with the capping, that no program could have a rate that was in excess of 60% above what was the average rate. This unallocation capitation affected 68 providers and achieved a savings of approximately $6 million. In addition to this, provider rates were then frozen until the new rates were to go into effect in July of 11. Now this session, Senate File 3309 that was introduced this week, is we did not share it prior to its introduction this week, and the amendment to which I just heard as I sat here this morning proposes to achieve savings by again capping rates. We looked at what it would produce if we capped rates at 30% above the average rates that were in effect of January 09, and we've examined the effects of this and now submit those for your consideration in this handout that you just received. If everybody has it, it starts out with, does everybody have it? Okay. It starts out with, and there are page numbers on the lower left that are, that I'll be using for reference. What it does is it looks at the rates for different programs within type. So the front page is adolescent room and board rates. And it lists each vendor, and it lists what their 1109 rate was, then what it was capped at the unallocation, and then what percent reduction that was for those programs. Then it goes back again to say what it would be capped at if it has this 130% rate, and calculates again what percent reduction that is. And then the final column is the total reduction in rates since January of 2009 for certain programs. So you can see just on the first page, Minnesota Correctional Facility for Adolescents at Togo, if this rate proposed cap at 30% above the average were to go into effect, that would be a 63% reduction in rates for that program since January of 2009. And 39% for the next program. Now, I'm not going to take a lot of your time, but I do want to point out just a couple things here. If you turn to page 7 on the left, going by the bottom left numbers, page 7, that's my handwriting. All right. You can see when we're looking at high-intensity inpatient treatment rates, this would be 28%, I'm looking at the far right column, a 28% reduction for New Ulm Medical, for Cambridge Medical, for Care at Wilmer, New Beginnings at Waverly, 21%, and here are the other care programs, and that was my point of having you look at that page. Then if we look at page 12, we can see this is low intensity adult inpatient. You can see again care at Fergus Falls, those two programs would be almost cutting their rates in half, and other programs that would be hit. Then if you look at page, go back to page 10 for a second, I think. Nope, sorry, go to page 14. Sorry. All right. Then if you go to page 14, this is outpatient programs. And you can see, first you see the great variability in rates, which I addressed and we're trying to fix as soon as we can. But you can see that the programs that would be most hit with capping again are first the programs that have already been hit. And here, a lot of our American Indian programs, almost all of these would be hit with significant hits, reductions of over 30% since January. Then finally, to Senator Berglund's point, if you look at the last page, yes, there are some programs that are medication-assisted therapies, which are methadone maintenance, which are the most cost-effective treatment in the United States and the world, for that matter, where people simply receive medication every day. And those do operate at very low rates, and that at about $10, $12 is the national average for that. So for these reasons, we believe that the capping approach is not the best approach to achieve these savings, because it hits twice the programs that were already hit by capitation with the unallocation. We believe that if you take this route, it will create such extreme deep cuts from existing programs that it would threaten their existence. What program can hit, you know, can absorb a 20%, 30%, 40% cut in what it's reimbursed? And we think it would compromise the array of services that are available, such as state-operated services, which take the people who are committed. If those programs close, where do we put our committed people? Do we put them in jail? They have a disease. I don't know. It would also disproportionately hit many American Indian programs and some of the medication-assisted therapy programs, again, compromising the array of services we have. So for that reason, we believe that the approach of the governor's, which is to take a percentage cut and apply it across all programs, is the better approach. I believe it's more equitable to do an across-the-board cut to all programs. And I make the analogy of a family coming into hard times and cutting the kids' allowance. If the first time you just cut the allowance at two of the kids and then you have to cut again, are you going to cut the same two kids or are you going to spread it out a little bit across all the children? I don't know. I think because we will be reworking this with Senator Berglund's amendment to go to 40%, but I believe that the field could better absorb an across-the-board cut to all programs than to hit twice the programs that are at the top end that serve the most acute and complex patients.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Falkowski. I'm glad you're going to be reworking this. I see that the facility in my district, which is the only one that's remaining anymore, all the other facilities have closed, is being cut 192%. Does that mean they get to pay 92% or what?
See, that's why we did it. What page are you on?
Page two, the top of page two.
Okay.
It's a full range facility with detox and inpatient and outpatient and halfway homes and everything, but.
Well, that would be, I mean, what it basically says, Madam Chair and Senator, is that with the new proposal, that program would go from a rate of $212 to a rate of $72, which is, I mean, right. That's why I wanted everybody to see this. It has really significant effect.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members, I'm sorry we're having to sit here talking about cutting chemical dependency treatment at all. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to continue making cuts on top of cuts to programs like this. I was hoping I would be able to bring you a proposal that would generate some revenue for CD, but that sort of has fallen apart. So, you know, it's another option for us to look at, and I know there are other providers out there that would prefer this option to what the governor has proposed, because when you have a much lower rate and you're doing the same thing that somebody else is doing in the field, then if you get a cut off of your very low rate, you know, it's harder for you because you have less to absorb the cut with. And I think we heard that testimony when we had public testimony on the governor's budget.
Ms. Falkowski, thank you for your testimony today.
Yeah, thank you.
Bob Melson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, the committee. My name is Bob Melson. I'm the chair of the Public Policy Committee for MARCH, which is a statewide organization, which you can just see from the rates is all over the place on this proposal. First off, I would like to thank Senator Berglund and actually the whole committee for wrestling with us in this very trying time. We need some thoughtful suggestions and conversations. First off, as Senator Berglund said, MARCH is firmly against any cuts to chemical dependency treatment at all, and there are some options, probably not the right place to bring it up, but an excise tax and some other things that we've been working for. We also understand at the same time that the state really has a need to do something with the budget, and we're willing to try to help to the very best of our ability. CD rates have been frozen and capped, as Ms. Falkowski pointed out. They've been negotiated with in mind what the counties wanted to provide within their service areas, and that's how the rates have been generated over the years. This has created inequities in rates. Newly licensed programs were able to negotiate rates that were above the median because they were brand new programs and didn't have a history, and had a lot of costs associated. A couple of programs that I've helped get up and running, paid rent on a building for well over a year while they were waiting for the licensing process, to the tune of $70,000 to $80,000, the ones I'm familiar with. That was before they were able to open for their first client. The governor's 5% proposal strikes many very strongly at the very lowest rate programs because they're operating on a very low margin. There is no ifs, ands, or doubts about that. They've taken things out of their program. They have not provided services within their program that they knew their clients need because they just didn't have the money, okay? The 30% proposal protects rates for the lowest rate programs, but our concern is that it has a very detrimental effect on programs that provide specialized services, locked programs, that's not really addressed in the rate, CDMI, programs that provide or add in transportation and stuff like that, and also in-home services. There are some programs that provide in-home services that their rates are above what is the norm or the average or the mean, whatever word you want to use, because they do meet with people in different situations or provide specialized services. And it's not really reflected. Another concern that many of our providers have is the room and board rates have been negotiated without any real consistency or guidance in what belongs in room and board and what belongs in consistent treatment rates. And so that has created some real wide ranges in room and board versus treatment costs or program costs. And that really strikes at some of the programs that, while they look like they have very high rates, they didn't get there by accident. They provide specialized services, and at the same time, it was negotiated with the county based on what the county wanted to buy at the time and what would be most helpful in that situation. Our programs are all very unique and lots of times regional.
Mr. Melson, thank you. I'm a little concerned about the time remaining. I'm going to ask Larry Blair to come up and make some brief comments, please. Mr. Blair, welcome.
Hello. My name is Larry Blair. I'm the director for Fountain Centers. And first of all, I'd like to thank Senator Berglund for this. I'm looking at the issues that we have. As was already mentioned, there is a wide variety of rates throughout the state. I believe for the most part, a lot of the services are the same for this the same rates. There are some differences with the state-operated services. With some of the people that are committed, their cost is higher. I think this is a way to start to level the playing field for all of us. For a agency that is at about the average or even several of our programs are below average, again, it levels the playing field, I believe, for programs that offer very similar services. Again, I want to be mindful of your time. So.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. I welcome you to the committee. I don't have you on my list, if you could identify yourself
Madam
for
Chair.
The record.
Absolutely. My name is Mark Casagrande, and I'm with Park Avenue Center. And I just, again, want to thank Senator Berglund for being so proactive. I am grateful for this sheet because this sheet actually is concrete of the disparity in rates. If you look at page 14 of Ms. Falkowski's handout, you see at the top an outpatient service rate of $253. It takes you to page 24 for the same outpatient service at $12.04. That gives you a better understanding of the disparity of rates that we're talking about. As Ms. Falkowski indicated, we are in the middle of a rate restructure. And I expect that this top echelon will be brought down by July 2011. In other words, the 5% across the board cut is only for a year. However, the top paid providers, in other words, the providers that are at 140%, will be brought down in this restructure next year. So literally we are talking about doing this 1 year prior to what will in all likelihood happen next year through this rate restructuring process. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Berglund, do you have any final comments?
So, Madam Chair, I'd just like to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill with the understanding that both parts of the proposal might continue to be massaged.
And I would just encourage members that, you know, have additional thoughts or ideas on this. I know that Senator Berglund is committed to continuing to work on this. So I think that's our invitation. So thank you, Senator Berglund. Senator Berglund moves that Senate file 3309 be laid over for possible inclusion. Do we need to Thank you, Senator. We'll move on to Senate file 2937. It's number 5 on your agenda. Senator Rosen, chemical dependency treatment pilot projects. Welcome, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. I do have a A3 amendment.
I believe the A3 amendment is being distributed, members.
Would you like me to just go through the amendment for Senate file 2937? Madam Chair, just briefly, this is the chemical dependency treatment pilot project bill, and Senator Marty's committee, there was questions about a fiscal note, and you should have a fiscal note in front of you also, along with the amendment. Thank you. In 2009, the legislature passed legislation that allows the county chemical dependency pilot projects. This legislation authorized the establishment of a chemical health care home pilot project to test a service delivery redesign. This redesign would offer appropriate flexibility that ensures timely access to services as well as better aligned systems and services for client. The A3 amendment, Madam Chair and members, was a result of a meeting that we had just several days ago with the department and with the county, with Mr. Harder, and came up with some clarification and some comfort language. I'll just point out a couple things. On the first page, subdivision 5, line 28, instead of services, we expanded that definition to say for non-treatment pilot services. That was just some comfort language. And then on line 33, we had the definition of a non-treatment pilot services. And I'm not sure, is this in their packets?
Was that I don't think so.
Okay. And that just talks about what a non-treatment pilot service is. It includes the navigator services, peer support, family engagement support, housing support, rent subsidies, supported employment, and independent living skills. And on page 2, line 3, the new language to clarify what's the expenditure, and we say the share of forecasted expenditures. And we carry that language down to line 9. And in that paragraph, number D, we clarify that on line 10 that a separate account within the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund, and that just kind of makes sure that we know where those funds are, okay? And then also on line 13, the non-treatment pilot services expenditure within, and that carries that through. And the other language I want to point out, line 14, we included the word county because this is a two-pilot project. One pilot project is for Washington County, and the other is for 13 counties down in southeast Minnesota. And line 18, the new language would start on line 18, except that any chemical dependency treatment funded under this section must continue to be provided by a licensed treatment provider. And that, again, was comfort language for the department and for the providers. So this bill basically just needed to be cleaned up from last year's implementation and from the current bill. Clarifies the start and end dates and clarifies the evaluation component, creates mechanism for financial risk sharing with the counties, and establishes an out clause for participating counties. I have Mr. Harder here from the Still County Human Services Director, and I have Carol Falkowski from the department.
So, Senator Rosen, I think the addition of forecasted expenditures is a good part of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. And I appreciate the council's work, Ms. White and Dennis and Albright.
There is no fiscal impact to the bill, so perhaps in light of our time, we could just see if there are any questions for the witnesses. They are here in support of the bill. Seeing none, Senator Rosen, do you want to move the bill?
I would. For possible inclusion, Madam Chair, or would it go straight to the floor?
I thought it could go by itself. It has no fiscal impact, unless you have a reason to think it needs to be in the omnibus bill.
No, Madam Chair, I don't. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, I'd like to move that Senate File 2937 be
recommended
to pass.
As
thank
amended.
You. And as amended and sent to the floor.
No, it would go to full finance first.
Full finance, okay. Yeah. Thank you, Madam.
I'm trying to get them to let the bills that don't have fiscal notes go, but
okay.
I don't know, by motion, but I don't know if I'll be successful with that. Most of them are coming from this division, so, you know, doing what I can there. You might want to help me out by adding your voices to that chorus. Any further discussion of the motion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. And Senator Rosen, thank you for all your good work on this proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I think with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, members.
Fiscal note for the surcharge.
Working class neighborhood.
Yes, sir.
As soon as you start hitting businesses, it'll be there on the right
side.
It is.
Charge ended 2010.
It's the best fit in this place I've ever been to.
Fabulous.
And I've been to it.
Really? Okay.
And
yeah.
The owners.
Well, can they get us a new fiscal note in fairly short order?
Went to the floor.
They
well, finance and then.
Great folks.
I'll be here Monday.
We did it before Marty's bill.
I'll be in during the break.
Oh, really? Because they'll come and chat.
They'll sit at the table.
Yeah.
And where is this?